We just need to have to reconnect it.
All right. So, I'm presenting today on molecular politics and my take on it. And so I've been, many of you know, I ran for office based on the idea. I ran for office in, you know, the election was last November. I did way better than I thought I would, given the amount of effort that I put into. Not that I didn't put any effort into it, but because I had to gather a lot of signatures to qualify to run on the ballot. And but I got something like 8,500 votes. And I don't
know.
I mean, I think they just saw my name. Oh, that's somebody other than the other candidates.
Other, yeah.
Yeah, it was just other. And so I think just, you know.
It helped us. Stuck in the box.
You were stuck in the ballot box. Okay, we're going to talk about ballot box stuff in a little bit toward the end. A question, because I had to gather signatures, you know, I most of the people I knew. And so when I would come into their homes to get their signatures, I'd ask them a question. I'd ask them several questions. And I'm going to ask some of these questions to you. How many politicians do you trust?
Two.
You trust one? Who are two? You trust two? Okay, so we have two.
Oh, great.
Who is the Susan, I'm just curious. Who's the one that you trust?
Thomas Massey.
Okay, interesting. We have other people who like him too.
I think he could curse.
Does anyone else trust any politicians?
I really like Bernie Sanders.
Okay, Bernie Sanders.
You trust him to make the wrong decision.
Okay, we're trying not to. We're not going to go there. We're not going to comment on
the question.
We're not going to comment on the individual politics of it. It's the reason that we don't. Why do you suppose we don't trust them? Not the ones that you do trust. Why are there so many as a percentage that we don't trust?
They don't
because
do
they
what
could be bought out. Yeah, they could be influenced by about five different sources.
And they don't do what they say they're going to do.
Okay, so yeah,
they don't make their promises.
They don't keep their promises.
Keep their promises, yeah.
Yes.
Things like AIPAC control them, not their constituents.
Okay, so basically they, many times people, they run on a particular thing and then they, as soon as they get in, you can almost tell. As soon as they get in, it's something else other than what they said. Mm-hmm. And then election time comes again, and then all of a sudden they go back to, let me talk about what I said I was going to do. And then they try to prove that they really did what they said. And it's usually nothing close to what they should have been doing.
Tulsi Gabbard. Somebody didn't mention her.
Tulsi Gabbard.
Yep.
Okay. She's been. We won't. I like her in many regards also, and I can respect Bernie Sanders even though I disagree with what he, the way that he, with his conclusions. I respect him at least sticking with what he says. Let's talk about why we needed we're going to talk about the Constitution for a bit. What were some of the, I did some research trying to figure out what preceded the Constitution?
Magna Carta.
English law.
Okay, English law. Common law, the Magna Carta.
Yeah.
We first had the Articles of Incorporation.
Yeah, the Articles, yeah, something like
Article,
that.
Articles of Confederation.
Yeah.
Go back thousands of years.
The Bible.
Okay.
The Constitution was based on the Bible.
Okay. So we have the Bible, you have the Law of Moses, the Ten Commandments.
The Torah.
The Ten Commandments. The five books of the Torah. Yeah.
You have the very first one that I saw, that I could determine was that was a real law, was the Code of Ur-Nammu. This was early Mesopotamian law. Okay. And then from there we have the Code of Hammurabi, which was a lot of, you know, an eye for an eye, which was kind of a precursor to Mosaic law, perhaps. The Ten Commandments is something that I mentioned, which is, you know, biblical law. So we have, why did we need that? Why did we need these laws? What were the people trying to do that precipitated these things. Yes.
Create
a structure.
To become civilized.
To become civilized, okay.
To control the natural man.
To control the natural man, okay.
Yeah.
And a lot of these laws were kind of more outwardly. Mm-hmm. Pretty much all laws right now are, you know, an outward manifestation or an outward kind of effort to try to keep things in check, right? Mm-hmm. So there were also, then we have kind of the Roman Republic. There was the Roman Empire, English common law, and kind of going in order as far as I could tell that they were in order. The Magna Carta. And what were some of the things of the Magna Carta? Does anybody know what were kind of some of the advancements that we had with the Magna Carta?
Human rights, I think.
Natural rights, God-given rights.
Okay.
Well, and the nobles could hold the king in check.
Okay, so maybe it was one of the first...
Checks and balances.
Maybe one of the first instances of checks and balances that others had. It wasn't just a, you know, a king or some whatever deciding on a particular law.
Did they have some aspect of due process in it?
Yes.
Yeah, so it said in my summary, limited royal power, guaranteed due process, and trial by jury. That was one of the things that was with the Magna Carta. The English Bill of Rights... And then we come to the U.S. Constitution. Why did they want to do this? Why did they want to come together to create, first of all, a country and the laws that would be behind the country? What were some of the grievances?
They wanted to escape the tyranny of England.
Taxation without representation.
Yeah, they wanted freedom. Freedom.
They wanted freedom. It's
a history class. A lot of the southern states, when Britain outlawed slavery, they started freaking out that they might impose slavery on the southern states. So they wanted their freedom so they could own slaves.
Okay, that could be.
Rhode Island was the first to call, which is interesting because it was one of the far north colonies. They were the first to call for a Congress, but they were the last to ratify the Constitution.
Yeah. Okay.
But I thought it was just a small group of men that organized the whole thing because it was technically treason what they did. I mean, at the time that they did it, it was treason against England. And it was just like 3% of the people who wanted... To become a country?
About a third wanted independence, a third were loyal to the king, and a third were in between.
But the people who actually took action to do something about it, to write the bills and the constitution?
Well, the leaders were just a few, but there was about a third that were pretty enthusiastic about breaking off.
Okay.
So you had a third, and a third, pretty much. From what I've been able to discover.
Okay, so there's this idea that we wanted the United States or the colonies at the time wanted to break free from royal rule. Yes.
They wanted to protect their God-given rights because
okay.
The crown kept trampling them.
Okay, so there was they wanted to represent themselves and protect the rights so they're not trampled.
Right.
So that was definitely a lot of the impetus for starting this. So they're starting to form this idea. Many of the founding fathers, you have to start talking about it first, right? You just don't go, we're going to call a constitutional convention or whatever they did that were the immediate precursors for the formation of the Constitution. So they, you know, they talked with between themselves and started building kind of the intellectual framework to start presenting to people.
It's interesting that a lot of the work was in taverns where they gathered together and just talked and formulated, and then that was kind of the initial beginning of everything, I think.
Okay.
They started crunching brochures, and they were quoting John Locke, and they were quoting Montague, and they were educating the masses as to what the philosophers were saying about their rights and about what good governance should look like.
Yeah, so it wasn't just an emotional appeal to this or that. It was an intellectual framework that these people were coming up with and starting to share.
They're probably a lot more biblically literate, too. So
yeah, absolutely.
They could make that tie.
Okay, so let's jump forward a little bit. We're not going to talk about the Articles of Confederation and that. We're going to talk about the Constitution as it was ratified the first time. Who or what was represented? Who were negotiating? What entities were negotiating in this formation of the Constitution?
The states.
You're talking about people? It was Jefferson and Hamilton were the primary.
Those are individuals representing something else.
Delegates from the states.
Okay. So the states were the ones...
pushing it.
The states were the ones that were coming together trying to figure out... They wanted themselves represented. They knew that we were trying to create a bigger... trying to come together to create a bigger government. So there was... The big argument between do we want a smaller federal government or a stronger central government? There were some differences, major differences of opinion when this was coming about. But the point I'm trying to make is that the states were the ones who were behind this.
Can you call them states before the formation of the United States?
The colonies.
They had constitutions by state before. The Constitution.
Really?
Yeah, each colony had its own constitution.
One governor.
So the reason
part of it was commerce. They were trying to regulate the commerce between the states so they wouldn't impose tariffs against one another.
Yeah.
Mm. So yeah. And they were trying to make it even so that commerce would be even across all the states.
Mm. And the money would be
the same. The main point I'm trying to make here is that when we typically think of the federal government, we only think of typically, the branches of the federal government, which were the executive, judicial, and the legislative. A lot of times, even though it's built within the Constitution itself, the states, we don't think of them a lot. And I think that is a... the states, by and large, in my estimation, have been left out in many aspects of how the Constitution is carried out. And we'll get to more of that in a little bit. This is just an interesting thought. Was the Constitution inspired?
Uh-huh. I say yes.
I believe it was. Prior to the forming of the United States, there were a group of people. Well, Francis Bacon wrote about the New Atlantis, which is referring to his vision of the United States.
So we have not only that, we have, it's a biblical, these men, and there were probably several women too, that were involved in the framework to put this together that were very biblically based.
And I think BK talks about the hierarchical impulse that was coming through, and it started before the Magna Carta. I mean, we just kind of went through this evolution of law and both freedom, promotion, protection of freedom. So, yeah, I think it was inspired.
Most of them were Masons who started it.
They say that Saint Germain might have assisted that as well, and also that it's going to be the law of the land for the millennium, so we could assume that it's inspired, otherwise it wouldn't belong to the millennium.
I think anything that works for over 200 years has to be inspired. Yeah. What I wrote 210 years ago doesn't work anymore.
In the Doctrine and Covenants, it talks about that it's in... I don't remember the exact verbiage. Maybe some of you can help me on that. But it's mentioned in the Doctrine and Covenants as basically from God. The reason I bring it up, why is it inspired? People get it in their mind that there are no flaws with it. They seem to have this kind of... They worship the Constitution to the degree because they think it's from God, and I do believe it is from God. I'm just setting that up as something that I'm going to come back to also. So not only are the states being kind of largely ignored, but the document is inspired. However, It's not perfect.
Yeah, it's interesting that the Founding Fathers saw it as best thing developed so far, but they thought it was far from perfect and that we would improve upon it as time went on. But they didn't realize, I don't think, how much we would go maybe the other direction.
Yeah, yes.
I think it also has like mirror-like, how do I say this, kind of like mirror-like similarities to the kind of idea of like Satan saying that God's plan is old school. And so we also have people that are saying that this is a paper that only worked for those times and that for modern times we must upgrade it. But I think that has kind of a sort of a satanic, egoistic feel to it, where it says that things, because they're so old, don't work.
Yeah.
But we all know the phrase where it says that if it's not broken, we should, you know, fix it. But you make a good point that if it's functioning properly and the Constitution is in place, then it should be working. But if things aren't, if appendages of it aren't working, then it looks like the Constitution's not working.
Yeah.
Can I bring up another point?
Yeah, sure.
Is that the Bill of Rights is only mentioned... only mentions the grand jury. The Constitution itself doesn't mention the grand jury. And the grand jury, some people call it the fourth branch of the government. And the original intent of the grand jury were people, regular everyday people, coming together once or twice a year to hold the government in check. It was another check and balance that if there were any government officials who were going against the Constitution, they were supposed to be indicted by a grand jury of the people. And there was no such thing as county attorneys or district attorneys or anything like that. It was for the people to come against the government.
Yeah, thank you. So along this kind of idea, was the Constitution inspired? Well, what version of the Constitution was inspired?
How many are there?
2.7.
Well, what I mean by that is there have been amendments since it was originally ratified that greatly changed many of the things that it changed the power structure of the Constitution itself.
Well, the Bill of Rights is definitely inspired, and I think that's part of the wholeness of the thing.
I think the ability to change, to make amendments to the Constitution is probably what helps make it more perfect than if it didn't change.
Yeah.
So you want to be able to make changes to it.
Right. And there are some that the 13th Amendment, and for those that don't know what that is that?
Slavery.
Okay, yeah. So originally there was slavery, and so we had to, you know, the Civil War and all that, we had to repeal slavery. We had to outlaw it, basically through the Constitution. Yeah. Are there any other amendments that may have changed the power structure in a way that was not congruent with the original ideas of the founders?
Well, giving women the right to vote was a big mistake.
Okay.
The 14th Amendment took away the 14th Amendment put us all on a level playing field with the slaves. In other words, it took away our God-given rights.
What is the 14th Amendment?
I can't quote it to you.
Paraphrase.
Well, that did away with slavery, though.
No, it
changed our citizenship status.
Yeah.
It took us away from being one of the people to making us a citizen. And a citizen is not one of the people. So that's where a lot of crookedness happened between the 13th and 14th Amendment.
Okay.
That was one of the worst.
Now, I don't quite understand. How do you think the 14th Amendment...
Okay, let me look it up if you want. Perfection here.
Yeah.
One of the ones that I want to talk about is the just for a minute is how we elected senators.
Yeah.
Do you know that the way that senators were chosen was different than it is now?
The states used to do it.
Okay, the state legislatures used to, constitutionally, the state legislatures were the ones that selected the United States senators. And so this goes back to the idea that the states had a part in that, and so that the state legislatures had representation, a direct line of representation through the senators. And so the senators were supposed to represent the state interests. And so that was changed to make it a popular vote, you know, that was put toward the people in that particular state.
What year was it changed, do you remember?
I don't remember.
But now the people elect senators.
The people elect senators, but it changed the dynamic, the original dynamic of the Constitution.
The states lost power majorly.
So it used to be that the representatives, the legislature,
the state representatives,
used to elect
the state legislature,
or vote for senators.
Because you're supposed to have a check and balance between state power, between people's power, and between the executive branch, and that was how you kept that all in balance.
Yeah, so we typically think of, like we're going to mention, is the separation of powers, the balance of powers between the federal executive and the judicial branch. Is everyone up on that? How they have checks and balances between those? Well, the checks and balances that I would like to kind of bring up are the checks and balances between the state government, the federal governments, state governments, plural, the federal government, and the people, ultimately. I think that's an important balance of power that has been drastically altered and has been created what we have today, which is, yes, there are some vestiges of, we still on paper have a lot of our rights, but many of them have been trampled and we're being taken advantage of in ways that the founders didn't envision.
Yeah, right now there's not much difference between the Senate and the House of Representatives. It's like the Senate or the little House of Representatives.
Right.
So we know, we talked about kind of the timeline of different codes of law, and we went from basically nothing. You have you have the individual, and then the family, and then extended family and tribes, and there's this kind of progression that was made, and eventually there needed to be something to kind of hold us together and bring us together. So we had so it wasn't just at the whim of somebody. So one of the major things that was that we have from the Constitution, it wasn't the very first one, but it was a written Constitution. In my research, and there were probably parts of it that were written, but the common law was largely just an oral kind of tradition. A major advancement in the U.S. Constitution, one of the things was it was written. Another is the federalism, which is the balance between the states and the federal government. The separation of powers within the federal government itself, the checks and balances of those. And then ultimately you have the popular sovereignty, which is the people are the ultimate check on the federal government, even though we've been cut out sometimes by law in some instances where we're not directly able to have a check on things in the government where we should. And there are some other things that were important about, important advancements about the federal government. But I'm just kind of
Can I mention something about Amendment 9? So Amendment 9 of the Constitution says the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. In other words, all of our rights are not written in the Bill of Rights. Our state Bill of Rights are actually stronger than our federal Bill of Rights. And there's a ton of common law rights that are never mentioned. And they still can't go against those, even though they do every day in Congress and in the states.
You mentioned a fourth branch of government, and some people have a different idea about what they think the fourth branch of government is.
Grand jury.
Well, that's what she said. It was that fourth, maybe an unofficial fourth branch of government. What did you say?
So the press.
The press.
If they're really doing their job. Yeah.
Okay, they should be. Yeah.
Military industrial complex.
Okay, so that. That's kind of the vein the avenue I was going at is unelected bureaucracy. Okay, and this goes to the idea that they can do regulation without representation. There are these agencies created within the federal government that they are basically an entity in and of themselves.
Like the IRS?
Yes.
Yes.
So in June of 2024, the Supreme Court in SEC versus Jakursky shot down the agencies. If you go and read that, it's saying that the agencies do not have supreme power, that they cannot do what they've been doing for the last 80 years, and the Supreme Court is shooting down the agency's power.
I think there's some important things happening. Have they followed that precedent or the ruling by the...
No, they're fighting it tooth and nail. And the Supreme Court keeps coming back and doing other...
Knocking it down. People just keep suing.
What it boils down to is this. It doesn't matter what laws we have. If the majority wants a certain direction, that's the direction we'll take, whether it's in the Constitution or not. That's what it boils down to.
But it's not the
so
majority.
So what we have to do is
it.
convince the majority and work with the majority.
We're going to get to the proposed solution in a few minutes. You're jumping ahead, JJ.
Yeah.
I'm laying the groundwork here, okay? I'm trying to show a problem and then a solution.
Yeah. Don't call on me anymore.
You just spoke up. Okay, so we have this unelected bureaucracy that is taking... Can you turn on that fan for me? I think it's that second switch.
The other one. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
And put it a little lower so it won't be so fast.
You do the slider up and down. So we have... I mean, I see articles pretty much daily of these three-letter organizations within the government doing things like, where did they get that power to do that, and why do they think they can do that?
They can.
Do we have a check on that as people?
Oh.
In the past, no.
I mean, like when Edward Snowden said that the NSA was spying on U.S. citizens and nobody did anything about it?
Yeah, they were just like, oh, we're going to charge you for treason or whatever. For exposing unconstitutionality, right?
That worked out well.
The people have a very, very indirect check on bureaucracy. You have to elect representatives, you have to elect a president that will go along with peeling back and reining in these agencies. So there's a tremendous amount of effort that has to go in before you can even touch an agency that's there.
And even then, it's so embedded with people
that's
who've
not
been
true.
There.
Well, let's... Okay, we can talk about that later.
Japan.
Don't call on her anymore.
I'm not calling on her. She's... And I appreciate your comments. I appreciate your comments. Another one that... and I don't want to go too deep into this also, but it was... If we didn't have this and it were different, so much of our government would be different, and that's the Federal Reserve. There's no way that a private organization should have any sort of sovereignty over a country.
Right.
Yeah. If you're not aware of how this works, they passed the Federal Reserve Act. I think it was 1913.
Yeah, December 22nd, to be exact.
Okay, there's a huge conspiracy about this, and I would encourage you to at least be knowledgeable about how this works. Basically, it took the power from the United States federal government to create its own money. And so now we're in a position where we have to borrow money if we need it.
And we don't need to be paid.
And we have to pay interest.
And then we have to pay interest on top of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Federal Reserve we could take up the whole rest of the meeting talking about that. But again, the point I'm trying to make is there are several things that have been happening since the Constitution was originally ratified. To take away the rights of the states, the rights of the people, and just our individual rights. There are so many things that have been happening that have been impinging on those rights. And sometimes we just kind of throw up our hands and go, what am I to do? We just feel powerless.
It has to come to a crisis before anything will ever be done.
And it may have to. I was trying to boil it down. What is the essence? If you had to, in one sentence or phrase, describe what the Constitution was originally, what the original intent of the Constitution was for, what would you say that would be?
To limit the
protect the freedoms
power.
Of the individual.
Limit the power of the government.
Protect the freedoms of the individual.
Protect the freedoms of the individual.
Yeah. Of the people, by the people, and for the people.
Okay.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah.
So.
So people.
I don't know if I...
Very good, Israeli citizen.
So I was thinking about this, and then a thought came to me. I don't know that this. But what I came up with was the Constitution is to represent the majority, but protect the minority. The minority meaning protect the rights of the individual.
Hey, that's what I said.
Thank you. For saying that. You're off in that sentence. But the majority has to be represented in some way. Otherwise, the government would feel illegitimate. And I think that this is where we're lacking. The majority does not... How many of you feel represented?
Crickets,
right? We do not feel represented. Our rights are being eroded.
I don't even have the right to vote here.
Yeah, I mean, we need to change that.
Well, you can get that. Don't worry.
Just come we got connections.
There are kind of other avenues. What are the biggest holes, so to speak, in the Constitution? You said, Susan, and I'm going to call on you now. 99% of laws are what?
Unlawful. They are not in pursuance of the Constitution.
And what part of the Constitution is being taken advantage of or not being followed that would?
The separation of the three branches of the government, a lot of it, and the Bill of Rights.
So specifically, something I'd like to talk about for a minute is the 10th Amendment. Do you all know what the 10th Amendment is?
No.
Nope.
Mm-mm. So the structure of the federal government is set up that there are enumerated powers that the federal government has. Very specific things and areas of our life in which it has kind of dominion over, so to speak.
The laws Congress is supposed to be passing.
So, and those are, what are some of the things that the federal government, by the Constitution, by the enumerated powers, what are some of the things that are allowed by the...
They can establish an army.
The defense.
Only for defense and only for 3 years during time of war.
Okay. So there's so many things that are not set up that the federal government are doing. So this is the Interstate Commerce Clause. Anything that is not specifically written in the Constitution that says the federal government can do it, it is left to
left
whom?
To the states.
Left to the states.
Or the people.
Or the states or the people. Okay. So so many of the laws we have now totally disregard this. And this goes for healthcare. I know this may hurt some people's feelings. The federal government shouldn't really have any... They shouldn't be providing things for us. The welfare state, they shouldn't be providing... These things are not written within the federal government that they should be able to do. So they're... Not only have we had... You know, we have unelected bureaucracy. We have judges who are not judging according to the Constitution. We have the 10th Amendment or the states' rights, they're being completely changed and reduced. And that's really making it so nobody is happy. I mean, very few people are, I'm really happy with what's going on in as a whole in the federal government right now. It's just the congressional approval rates are so in the basement that they have no... There's no...
The executive branch now is not constrained by the Constitution at all.
That's true.
So, how do we fix this? What are some ways that we can fix this?
Someone with a Nike shirt has to make an app for this.
Come back to.
I would say educating the masses, because it's been quite deliberate since 1910 to stop educating the masses on our rights.
Okay, so some civic education is needed?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What?
Because if we don't know what our rights are, how can we protect them?
And if we don't know what they are, then we don't... And if we're not kind of active in our local and, you know, governments, we're just going to go, okay, well, they have an R or a D by their name, and I'm just going to check the box.
So, you're talking about what the legislators are supposed to be doing. They have enumerated things that they're supposed to be doing. All of us should know what those 10 things are. Okay. It's not that hard.
What avenues are available through the Constitution to make change?
Vote of the people.
Vote of the people in what way?
Well,
through state. You have to ratify through state legislature.
By amendment.
There's an easier way.
Okay, so we can. So there's, you can make an amendment to the Constitution, and this is funny. I think it's funny. There's so many laws and amendments that we pass, and we need to make one that says, you know, at the end it says, and we really mean it this time. You know, we have the First Amendment's being trampled, the Second Amendment, and like some of the things are so blatantly being abused that it's like, but we really mean it. Like, it's just kind of silly that some of the things.
The most important one is in the First Amendment. It's to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
Okay.
And petition does not mean signing a petition to say we don't like what we're doing. It's actually using the grand juries to tell the government you are wrong what you are doing.
So we have, not only can we make constitutional amendments, we can drive lawmaking also, right?
Yeah.
We can pressure our lawmakers. We can go to them and tell them what we want. We can come together as groups and do that also. So there are ways to make change, but they're just so hard. Some of the constitutional amendments, some of the things that people talk about are, we need term limits. Term limits, as far as I can tell, would require a constitutional amendment because the way that representatives and senators are, their terms and things like that, it's not limited constitutionally. So if a state said, we're going to do this, an individual state said that, it would be struck down as unconstitutional because they can't do that.
But states do have term limits, though.
But on their state representatives themselves, not on the federal.
Yeah.
So we do have avenues with which we can make change. And the one that I'm, the whole reason that I'm even standing here today is because I read JJ's book, Fixing America. And the proposal that is in there is what he calls molecular politics, and something that I didn't think was a really catchy name for trying to, you know, get people's attention. And I'm calling it citizen representatives. Citizen representatives is the idea that we come together and we elect our representatives. For instance, I ran in Utah's 2nd District. It's approximately by population a quarter of the state. And I was pledging to vote with the majority of them. So we would come together, we would put the vote for any bill that comes up in Congress, any bill or action that comes up in Congress that would require a vote by that representative, and I would put it to the people. And I would vote with the majority of them regardless of what I thought. So this is the big, I think, step forward that we can do within the framework of the Constitution. Now, some of the objections that I've received is we're a republic, not a democracy. But I'm not, citizen representatives is not changing any sort of constitutionality. The only thing that we're doing is changing who is influencing the politician. And as we talked before, when we were talking about if we trust these people, they're bought off. Well, why can't we, the people, buy them off, so to speak, and do it in a way that is
big money? We could buy them off.
Why does it cost so much to run for office? That's the next question.
And does it have to be? Yeah, it doesn't have to be that way. So the idea that we can, as a people, come together and influence politics in a very direct and easy. It's not going to be easy at the front and the front end. There's a lot of hard work that needs to go into making this a thing that everyone knows about and implements. But ultimately, it will come down to, you do research on an app that the representative or senator, whoever it is, you know, they will still have some input on it. They will have an audience that they can say, I would like you to vote for this thing, and this is why. They will still have the ability to influence the people, and hopefully they'll educate them.
So one of the things that are going along with this to make it most effective is the thing that we're fighting in Utah right now is, how do we set up our congressional districts? Because if we did that, you can bet gerrymandering would go through the roof so that certain districts would be heavily Democratic or Republican or something so that the majority would vote that way and make their representative vote that way. So how we set up the districts would become very, very important.
I think that's true in the short term. I think in the long term, with enough education, like you talked about, with enough education, people will start to understand the principles behind good government. To me, the Constitution is about cause and effect, actually. If we were to really break down the Constitution, there's a major component of cause and effect in the Constitution. The people have a demand for something. The people want to be represented, and they want their rights to be protected. And when that is impinged, that is their expression and their desire is impeded. And therefore, that causes the feedback mechanism in government to be changed. So whenever you have systems in which the will of the people or desire is impeded in any unlawful way, lawful or unlawful, in a way that people aren't heard, it creates a bunch of problems that are unintended consequences of the system.
So you would have to use much more education, because I'm thinking, as things are right now, if I had the ability to vote by sending a vote on your app for you to vote a certain way, I wanted to vote that way, but I didn't read the bill. I just went with the commercials that were on the TV that told me to vote yes on proposition. So I went to your app and voted yes on proposition, not knowing what it was. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking then that you would end up being more of an educator kind of representative.
Yeah. And, that's ultimately, not ultimately, but that's a major component of it, is that you don't want just any representative to be in this. You have to have somebody that understands the principles that we talk about every day, the principle of cause and effect. Really, economics also comes down to cause and effect. Prices have a direct correlation to cause and effect. The reason that things are so expensive is because healthcare and housing and education, something gets in between the person selling and the person ultimately buying. There's something in between there that is impeding and distorting the price signal.
A lot of it's government.
And a lot of it is government. Because they think that they know, this is too expensive, or they try to protect an industry, or they meddle in ways that they shouldn't meddle.
So my assistant was telling me the other day that in the state of New York, it costs $1 million to put a bus stop in. The actual cost is $100,000, and $1.9 million is regulatory fees per bus stop.
That makes sense.
Or to build a public toilet costs $1 million or so.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Places.
So one of the big concerns that I just touched on, but would like to go into it just for a few more minutes, is the idea that we're a republic and not a democracy. Again, this idea is not changing. It's not changing. I'm not putting this vote out to every single person. Every person can vote on it, but only the individual district representative or senator will only listen to those who are within his or her district. Mm-hmm. So it's not people. Strict constitutionalists are so scared of the people, but ultimately, isn't the ultimate check on the Constitution the people?
Mm-hmm. And the representatives are supposed to represent the will of the people, which they don't. Right?
They're supposed to. The ultimate check on the federal government is the people.
Mm-hmm. And educated people, if you remember.
We would like them to be educated, but educated or not, the people are a check on the government.
It used to be you couldn't vote unless you were a landowner and
male.
But the reason that they were saying that is because you had some skin in the game, so that you wouldn't vote yourself benefits.
Yeah.
and not work for them. They knew that could become a problem.
How many times in the Constitution is business done by a majority? People are so scared of the majority. Well, I would like to talk about how business is done in the Constitution by a majority. How many instances in the Constitution is something done by a majority? I'm not talking. Okay, yeah. Okay, the Electoral College is one, and who is it a majority of?
Electors.
And how are okay? So
by
they're
state.
It's by state. Each the number of electors that a state has is determined by the number of senators they have and the number of representatives they have. So Utah has 6 electoral votes. I don't know if you knew that. I must have forgotten that because I looked it up the other day. Are you going to say something? You look like you're going to say something. Okay, so the presidential election is done by a majority, just not a majority. It's done by a different majority. What about Supreme Court decisions?
Majority.
They're done by a majority of the Supreme Court justices.
Yeah, the majority is all over the place.
Okay, what about when bills are passed in the House?
Majority.
It's done by a majority. What about bills that are passed in the Senate? It's a majority.
And if they're vetoed, it's a majority.
The veto is a majority.
2/3.
Okay.
An override.
Changing the Constitution requires a super majority.
Or you could say it governs everything.
And there are a bunch more that we could go into. These are some of just the really big ones that are obviously business done by a majority. The representatives, now it doesn't say, they may not be actually elected by a majority, it's just by who has the most votes. So if there's 3 people and somebody's below 50%, there could be someone who has less than a majority or less than 50%, but it's still done by the most.
Right.
So there, the principle of the majority is within the whole work of the Constitution. Citizen representatives and molecular politics is not changing that in any way. We're still doing business by the district, the individual district. It's the majority of people in that district deciding, or the majority of the people in the state. Or I would like to have it implemented in the state legislatures, because I think, especially in Utah right now, it's just so crazy how some of these people just had, the power has gone to their head.
Spencer Cox.
Spencer Cox himself. Yeah, we can go into that even more. So I have a
question, Tyler. Wouldn't it work better if Congress did Congress's original job and the Senate went back to the states? And then we did what you're talking about.
So I haven't thought of that. It would require constitutional amendment.
Almost a Herculean.
I don't disagree with the idea of it. But
I'm
you would have to
work towards.
You would have to repeal, I think it's, is it the 17th?
17th.
I think it's the 17th
but
amendment.
Part of the education process, I think if we show what the advantage of having the states be stronger.
And this goes back to one of my original points, was that the original people negotiate, or the original entities negotiating for the Constitution were the states. Mm-hmm. And that state power, the state check on the federal government was a major one, was removed.
Yeah.
And
at the same time as 1913 banking. Think about it.
Yeah. And the income tax.
And the income tax. It was the same people.
So, Adam said I could take a few more minutes to take into his time. So,
I'm just pushing a button.
I want to talk about voting systems for just a minute, and this is going to lead into the app that I've been creating. How many of you know that your vote was counted correctly?
I doubt it.
In Israel,
you counted your own vote.
How do you know?
Because we can only vote with notes, and it is counted in the
district or whatever.
No, in the toll, in the poll itself, in the poll place, place of the poll itself.
They take the piece of paper and count it.
Yeah, and then they send it to the center with a summary of the count.
Yeah.
I would still
paper ballots.
Paper ballots, nothing else.
But who's counting them?
They're pretty smart.
The committee.
Okay, well, this is in Israel. Let's not spend a lot of time. No offense.
But it's how it used to be done.
No offense. Okay, in Utah, many of us are from Utah. It's purely mail-in voting or mail-in ballots right now. It's the only way that I know that my vote was even supposedly counted. You can check that it's been received.
You can ask that your vote. Text you that your vote's been counted.
But you don't know that they put it in the right column.
That's true.
You don't know that your yes counted as a yes and your no counted as a no. The voting systems are not set up for really accountability and transparency. When JJ first wrote the book, let me say it this way. When I first read the book, Fixing America, I was into Bitcoin, speaking of Bitcoin. And I was thinking there must be a way that we can implement the principles of Bitcoin in a way that would help these voting systems. One of the things with Bitcoin is there's a public ledger. That means that whenever there's a transaction, the entire network knows about that transaction. Now, they don't know who's behind that because it's anonymized. There's an address that is used, that you can track every transaction from that address. In my app, I want to make the votes transparent but anonymous. That means that when a vote is cast, that you can go and download or at least view every vote that's been taken. And you can go, oh, there's my vote, and yes, it is that I did vote that way. And then you can go to your husband or wife, hey, did yours the same way? And you can check theirs. And you can check the neighbor, hey, did your vote count the right? And you only have to do that a few times before you go, okay, this system is working. And there will be watchdogs who will handle the spot checks on the votes.
An audit.
Another important thing is we need to know that only the right people are voting. And I don't mean like we're not discriminating against people.
Citizen.
But you have to be a citizen to vote.
Some guy was voting for his dog for 2 years. They just found it.
Like the dog was registered?
The dog was registered.
Somehow a dog was registered. Okay, yes.
Wouldn't that also stop the dead people voting too?
Yeah.
That's a problem, right? Because it would be like there's like thousands of dead
or
people that are
students
voting.
Getting a 1 cent to their Utah address and they're going to school in Idaho
and
the parents are voting the Utah ballot and he's voting his Idaho ballot.
Yeah.
So that person is voting twice.
So we have to know that the person, first of all, is who they say they are.
Is alive.
So it goes to your point. It is who they say they are. Nobody who's dead should be voting.
So it should go against the Social Security system because that would track who's dead and who's alive.
Well, they're theoretically. Theoretically.
Right.
I'm going to just describe what I'm implementing, and then we'll extrapolate that to see how we can apply that to potentially existing voting systems. Since I decided to do this, I knew I needed an app to gather the votes. And there are existing voting apps out there, but they didn't do everything I wanted them to do. And so I've been working for a year. Now, my first try was before the election, and I put an ad out there basically, I'm looking for somebody who can create this for me. And somebody said, oh, I already have a voting app. And I ended up wasting $2,000 there. Because I don't need to spend time on why, but it just wasn't working out. So then I found a couple recent graduates from the technical college. My dad actually, a guy in his ward teaches how to create apps. And so I connected with him and I started working with these two young recent graduates and implementing my vision of what I wanted this app to be. And So it just took forever. And ultimately, it wasn't doing everything I wanted it to do in the time that I needed it to be done. And so from the time that I hired them, I started learning how to create apps. And I'm primarily using AI, but it's and it's been a it's been an education. I'll say that.
Have you used Grok for it? All that's supposed to be really good about apps.
So Grok, it's not the best one for apps.
Really?
Right. I've tried it a few times, and I'm not saying it won't ever be. But right now, if you're in the business or Claude is the one that is the best at doing so. Apps, right? C-L-A-U-D-E. So I'm going to just show you kind of what I've been working on.
Do we sustain you now, or do we...
sustain me? So this is... I'm going to describe what I'm doing to verify that the person is, first of all, a registered voter. And then we have to verify that they're who they say they are. And they have to, you know, we're verifying that the person is who they say they are and that they're a valid voter. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would, when I'm saying we need to have the right people voting, that's what I mean. I don't mean that we're discriminating in ways that are unlawful. It's anyone who is registered to vote, who is alive.
Lives in your district.
Lives within the district. Well, the way that we're going to do it, anyone can register for this, and then we'll filter based on where you live, and we'll determine what districts you live in and what states you can vote in. And
but how can he prove that he actually lives there? Can he put any address he likes?
So there are only so many things we can do over an app.
Well, if you apply for a driver's license, you have to bring in 3 proofs that you live there.
Right.
But somebody can move, and they could have an old driver's license and not update
right.
it. But I'm not going to be able to handle all the edge cases. Let me just describe what I'm going to do, and then there are some things I just can't.
Because if you are the first one, the only one in the country to do this, so people who wants to work against you will use this flaw against you and will say this can't work.
Yeah, but that I don't. That's such an edge case, and
there are companies that do this already, like Coinbase, Pi.
Yeah.
I'm
doing one from scratch, and you'll see what
it shows.
There's ways to tie it into background checks.
There are ways that I could pay additional money to check a database,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
like real time. Mm-hmm. That starts to be extremely expensive.
You use things like that at work,
and we could send people to somebody's house, you know. But I'm not going to do that. Okay, I'm showing the easiest, most economical way to reasonably determine what I'm trying to determine.
Right.
So the first thing that we do, and I wish we had a TV, and it doesn't, it, just believe me. Okay, the first thing we do, I'll show you. I mean, you can see it. The first thing we do is we take a photo of the front of the driver's license.
The thing that you, we can all see you.
I know. Okay. Pretend there's a driver's license right there. I'm just showing you the screen. Okay, so you center your driver's license in there and you press a button and it takes a photo of it. Mm-hmm. And that photo is uploaded to the servers that I'm using. Mm-hmm. Immediately upon upload, it triggers a graphical analysis of the driver's license. There are certain standards that every driver's license in the United States has, that it has to follow these standards.
Right.
And so we're checking against those standards.
Like the hologram?
The hologram, right. The placement, the font.
Yeah.
There are certain things that a legitimate driver's license must have to qualify as, you know, to follow the guidelines. So we're doing an initial check to verify that. The other thing that it's doing right then is it's taking the name, the address, it's taking the text information on there and storing it in a database for that time. The next step is on the back of every driver's license there's a barcode. And this is just a screen. I'm going to make it look like the other screen where you can frame it. Mm-hmm. But on the back of every driver's license is a barcode. And maybe I'll just pull up my... I don't have it, but somebody have a driver's license they could show? the back.
No, not here.
We're not driving today.
So the back of everyone has, it's called a PDF 417 for those who care. It's got a tremendous amount of data in it. And so my app scans this barcode and it extracts the information. And the information on that barcode is the same information that's on the front of the driver's license, just in an encoded format. So then we take and we compare the two. So the front of the driver's license data has to agree with the back of the driver's license data. So there's a comparison that we do there. There are also some things on the back as far as graphical things that we could... What I'm focusing on is the actual format of the barcode, because somebody could recreate a barcode. You can just print off a barcode. You can put all the same information in a barcode and print it off. But there are certain there are certain things within the barcode that only legitimate barcodes have. One of the other things that it tells us, as long as the states are following the guidelines, it tells you if the person's a citizen or not. So if it says not a citizen, well, then that's immediately they're disqualified. They can't. It's not going to proceed any further in the verification process.
You can get a driver's license and not be a citizen?
Yeah.
Utah all the time.
Yeah. Wow. But there can be also a citizen that doesn't have a driving license.
But what it should say on there is they're not a citizen.
Okay.
And that will show also on the front. It will say non-citizen driver or something like that.
So could you also use a state-issued ID card in your system?
I'm assuming that it has the same format as a driver's license, which I think they do.
Okay.
It's just a state-issued ID with the same barcode and the same basic information on the front. It's just not a driver's license.
So that will solve the problem for those who doesn't have a driving license.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.